Hi, I'm Tim.
And I'm Tony.
And this is All for None. And we missed all of you.
I missed me too.
Tony has, you know, that problem with his God complex as we talked about a few other
narcissism.
Narcissism? You're already that drunk?
I'm not that drunk.
But
I just like to make fun of words.
We do want to apologize to you guys for being gone for a couple weeks. We've had some things going on. But we're back in full swing, and we're ready to bring you some fun today.
We also want to make a mention about the technical difficulties with the All for Ganja episode. But, on a side note, if you listen to it high, it will fuck you up, son.
And if you listen to it on LSD, it's just going to sound normal.
Actually, yeah, that's pretty weird.
But so today, what we're bringing you guys, and this is the second episode where Tony gets to do all of his talking, because we said two episodes you were going to do it, because you made me do it for like three. Yeah, for three episodes in a row, I was doing it.
Two episodes? Fuck.
I need another
drink.
He signs contracts he shouldn't do.
Ironically, Timmy does not have his scotch.
Not today.
I have all the beers.
Well, you guys are about
and
to have
the toilet paper.
I bought all the plungers, so fuck this.
Seriously.
All right, so Tony, tell them what we are giving them knowledge on today.
Mass hysteria. Kind of going along with the whole coronavirus thing that I'm sure everybody's talking about, but I'm going to do it in a brand new kind of way, mostly with my dick out.
Could you, like, not do that? We're in a very tiny studio.
That's what makes it better. So what is mass hysteria? It is a condition in which a large group of people exhibit similar physical or emotional symptoms, such as anxiety or extreme excitement. It is also called epidemic hysteria.
Yay.
Its medical definition, is exactly the same fucking thing as its normal definition. So that's cool.
That's a thing. All right, well, I'll interject for a minute while he gets his notes together. Since we were talking about mass hysteria and we added the coronavirus, I'm actually going to read something from an article I read, which is how mass hysteria is making coronavirus worse than it actually is. So, in fear of a pandemic about the coronavirus, starting market is trying to sell off and stockpiling things you don't actually need. And it's like just, it's ridiculous. As mass hysteria in the human mind goes on, which hunts for information that fits the narrative, at a time when sanity and sanitation masks are in short supply. And so we'll go through that. And I'm sorry. My mind's now fucked up. But pretty much what I'm going to say about this is a respiratory virus should not need you to have to take all the toilet paper in your selfish little world, and I think it's stupid. Take it away, Tony. Back to you.
I've got a list.
He loves lists.
So, basically, this is 15 times people were consumed by mass hysteria. Okay? So, mass hysteria is basically when a large group of people get so collectively upset by a threatening delusion, whether real or imaginary, that it essentially takes over. It's like a horrible game of telephone, but with fear. The result is basically Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds without actually any birds. Here are some of the strangest cases of mass hysteria, which show how quickly society can become consumed. Number one, meowing nuns.
The fuck, meowing nuns?
Yeah. In France during the Middle Ages, a nun began inexplicably meowing like a cat. Other nuns soon joined her in the meowing until the entire convent was making kitty noises for several hours. It got so out of hand that the village had to call soldiers, who threatened to whip them if they didn't stop. Back then, it was commonly thought that some animals, especially cats, had the power to possess people.
It's fucking weird.
Number two.
Yay.
The Dancing Plague of 1518.
The Dancing Plague?
The Dancing Plague.
The only thing that plagues is the headache that I get at the end of the night.
A woman named Miss Trophy.
Trophy.
Living in Strasbourg, Alsace. Listen, if I'm fucking this up.
He's drunk.
I'm drinking, so. Yeah. Oh, in what is now France. Just fucking say France, Dex. Began dancing in the streets. She danced for multiple days by herself. By the seventh day, 34 others had joined. By the end of the month, 400 people were dancing with Miss Trophée. They never rested, and as many as 15 died per day due to heart attack, stroke, or exhaustion. You ever think I'm going to get to dancing plagues?
I've never seen you dance except for white boy dances when you're around the house. Or the helicopter.
That's when I'm naked. Number three. Y'all probably have heard about this. And one day we might actually probably do an entire episode based on this. The Salem Witch Trials.
Yay!
This is perhaps the most famous case of mass hysteria. In 1692, four young girls, Abigail Williams, who was hot in the movie, Betty Paris, can't remember who she was, Ann Putnam, she was kind of a sexy bitch. Oh, Ann Putnam Jr. And Elizabeth Hubbard all claimed to be having strange fits, which the clergy assumed was a sign they had been fraternizing with the devil. And so the witch trials began. In total, 25 Salem citizens were executed for suspected witchcraft.
Which, that, you know, witchcraft is just they don't like people for who they are. It's kind of like, you changed your hair, witch!
Yeah. I hate me too. Number four, writing tremor epidemic. The first breakout of this hysteria happened in Gross Tins when a 10-year-old schoolgirl's hand started trembling in class. The tremor spread to her whole body and eventually transferred to other students in her class. 15 to be exact. That same year, 20 kids in Basel, Switzerland, suffered from the same shaking. 12 years after that, 27 more kids suffered from tremors in Basel. The fuck that word is. Most likely due to hearing stories of the first outbreak.
Well, fuck. See, how long is your list? Did you say 15?
15.
And that's...
I'm at 5!
We are not even halfway through, and...
How much time have we had?
Only 10 minutes.
Only 10? Dude, I've got like 2 other lists.
We're going to be here for a very long time. Strap in. Get your beer cozy.
We're
going to
take breaks.
Yeah.
So I can drink. Number five, the Halifax Slasher.
Flatter? What are you, Donald Duck? Yeah, Donald Duck?
Better than Donald Trump right now.
I'm in peace. I'm impeccable.
In 1938, two women in Halifax, England, claimed they were attacked by a strange man with a mallet and bright buckles on his shoes. Soon, more people came forward saying they were attacked by a similar man, only this time he had a knife. It didn't take long before there were enough reports that Scotland Yard had to get involved. Eventually, many of these quote-unquote victims came forward to admit that they had made up their stories. Some of them were even sent to prison for public mischief.
Well, what'd you get, bitches?
Number six, the Mad Gasser of Mattoon.
Mattoon. That is an unfortunate name for a place.
Really?
It just doesn't... Would you say you were from there?
Abso-fucking-lutely.
What the fuck is wrong with you?
I'm from Mattoon. I apologize. I don't mean people are from Mattoon.
That place?
From Mattoon, Illinois are stupid. I'm stupid for doing that. Thank you. Bye-bye.
I apologize.
He was alternatively known as Anesthetic Prowler. He was also known as Frizz, Miss Frizzle, or the Phantom Anesthesiast. Anesthesiast. But most knew him as the Mad Gasser. In 1944, in Mattoon, Illinois, a woman named Eileen So Hard. What is that fucking name?
Kearney? Eileen. Yeah, Eileen Kearney.
Eileen Kearney claimed she smelled something terrible outside her window, which caused her throat to burn and her legs to go numb. She said she caught a glimpse of a shadowy figure as well. Soon the entire town was freaking out over this biochemical attacker, but no actual evidence of his existence was ever found.
I'ma find you, not this week.
Number seven, the Tanganyika laughter epidemic of 1962.
Oh, they have laughing gas?
That shit, well, hold up.
Did you lose your notes?
No, I was just checking back. In what was once Tanganyika, but is now Tanzania, three girls began laughing at their boarding school, and the joy was so infectious, soon 95 of the 159 pupils joined in. Some only laughed for a few hours. Others as long as 16 days.
Wow.
The school had to be closed, but that didn't stop the laughter from spreading to the next village over. Months later, another laughing outbreak.
All right, we're going to take a break, guys.
This
we'll be
time
right back.
Affecting 217 people.
And we are back, party people.
We apologize. We apologize for that. My daughter got a boo-boo. She got a hold of one of my razor blades while she was taking a bath. One of my shaving razors, not razor blades. I don't cut right now.
Not so, this week.
No, no. Not me. Anyway, number eight. The June bug epidemic. Around 62 workers in the dressmaking department at a U.S. textile factory in 1962 were suddenly affected by a mysterious disease.
Gingivitis. Oh, sorry. Wrong one.
Shut up. It caused numbness, nausea, headaches, and vomiting. The employees believe the illness had to come from being bitten by June bugs. But in reality, it was likely just a case of mass hysteria spurred by stress.
Yay! Stress. That's adulting, dude.
Pretty much. Number nine, the Blackburn Faintings. In 1965, several girls from a school in Blackburn, England, began complaining of dizziness and many fainted. within hours, 85 girls had been rushed to the hospital after fainting. A year later, it was determined that a recent polio outbreak had caused mass hysteria among the girls of Blackburn. Number 10, Mount Pleasant Hexing. In 1976, 15 students at a school in Mount Pleasant, Mississippi, fell to the ground and began writhing in pain. School officials and police suspected it might have been something to do with drugs, like it always is. But there was no evidence to suggest this, like there always isn't. The students believed it to be some sort of curse, and one-third of the school's students stayed home one day so as not to be hexed. Number 11.
Oh, yay!
West Bank Fainting Epidemic. A whopping 943 Palestinian girls and women randomly fainted in the West Bank in 1983. Of course, Israel was accused of using chemical warfare on the girls. Israel, in turn, blamed the Palestinians for poisoning their own people in order to frame them. In reality, only around 20% may have breathed in something toxic. The remaining 80% was consumed by hysteria.
Yay! Hysteria! Everybody is subject to it.
Number 12. Kosovo student poisoning. In 1990, thousands of young people in Kosovo were believed to have been made sick by toxic gases. What was that one guy's name? The mad gasser. He's back! Doctors never could quite figure out what exactly was poisoning them. So the theory that this was just one massive case of hysteria may be the closest thing we have to the truth.
Right. Oh dear.
Number 13.
Pokemon
Panic. In Pokemon's first season, there is one episode that never aired in the U.S. due to an outbreak of nausea and seizures that affected 12,000 Japanese children after they watched it in 1997.
I've actually heard of this.
The episode, Dino Senshi Portagon, a.k.a. Cyber Soldier Porygon, featured bright flashing lights that some believed caused the seizures. Others believed this was a simple case of mass hysteria.
Epilepsy.
I'm kind of going on the seizures side for that.
That's why they put it in video games now, is because flashing lights are, you know, known to induce seizures. That also helped it. Mass hysteria is the real killer. Don't stare at me like that. Jesus, I look like you're trying to get me out of my prom dress.
I'm not drunk enough. Number 14. Strawberries with sugar virus.
That sounds stupid.
In 2006, a Portuguese teen soap opera called Morangos com Açúcar aired an episode where the characters were afflicted with a terrible disease. Sure enough, more than 300 children who watched the episode began to think themselves were suffering from this illness. Several schools had to be closed in order to quell the perceived outbreak.
What the fuck?
Number 15. The Charlie Challenge.
Charlie.
Though a version of the game had been popular in South America for generations, it really took off recently with the hashtag CharlieCharlieChallenge. The game involves asking questions of some kind of supernatural being named Charlie. Charlie is supposed to answer by directing the movement of two pencils stacked on top of each other. In 2015, four young people in Tunja, Colombia, were sent to the hospital after believing they had been possessed by Charlie. A similar thing happened to teens in the Dominican Republic. As much as we'd probably all like to think that we're too smart for something like this to happen to us, keep in mind, many times this sort of hysteria causes your body to actually feel the perceived effects of the mysterious illness or spirit possession. The brain figures everyone around you is freaking out. Why shouldn't you be doing the same? Your turn for a minute. My throat hurts.
Your throat hurts.
I have coronavirus.
Not why we're here. Let me just a second, everybody. Everybody. Let's see.
You should have been ready for this. Why weren't you ready?
You know why I wasn't? Yeah, no, I'm not. Nice try, though.
You're still fired.
I hate you and your life. All right, hold on. Give me 1 second.
I'd hate you and your life, but you don't have one to be fired.
He's got a point. Shut up, Jerry.
I didn't get a chance to do that.
What, hate yourself?
Nah. I didn't get a chance to do that subject anymore.
What?
Oh, get fired?
No, well, that too, but no.
Oh, that.
I didn't get a chance to go out and fix this with people, so I didn't want to.
Okay.
Because we got to get up and go to the dump market. We got paperwork. So I'll
do it. Did you get my cigarettes?
I didn't, because you only gave me 10 or 6. They gave me 3. What was I supposed to
do? I have the 20 now, but since they're going to be tomorrow, I guess I can use
that as my reference. So, mass hysteria is no laughing
matter. Sorry for that brief interlude.
That was one of my roommates talking to me about my cigarette addiction, which is a bad addiction.
He's also his employee.
Yeah, he also works for me.
So March 1st, 2002, in a scenario straight out of Hollywood, school children start vomiting and fainting. School is evacuated and health officials, media, and parents rush to the scene. No cause for symptoms is found and the event is labeled as mass hysteria. Whether or not it's perceived a health threat is real, mass, or epidemic hysteria, alas, mass sociogenic illness or mass psychogenic illness is a very real phenomenon. May have profound public health, social, and economic repercussion. Report health officials from the Tennessee Department of Health and the CDC on January 13th of 2000. Issue of the New England Journal of Medicine. May I help you? For the safety of the community, I think you're obligated to do the best investigation. This is a quote, by the way. It says you're the best investigation you can, regardless of what your suspicions are. It's often in retrospect that you can really be confident of the diagnosis. Now, the quote is from Timothy F. Jones, medical doctor, an epidemiologist for the state of Tennessee. The fuck? Jones is with the CDC's Epidemic Intelligence Service in 98 since to 2000. When he and his coworkers were called to an investigation of an incident that occurred in a Tennessee high school. It began with when a teacher complained of a headache, nausea, shortness of breath, and dizziness after she detected a gasoline-like smell in her classroom. The school was evacuated and the teacher of several of her students... The school was evacuated. The teacher and several of her students were transported to the local emergency room. Eventually, 80 students and 19 staff members went to the hospital, with 38 being admitted when the school was reopened 5 days later. An additional 71 people went to the emergency room. Yet, despite an extensive investigation and exhaustive medical and environmental testing, the investigators found no evidence of toxic compounds anywhere in the school. The total bill for the incident, this is always fun, where we find the money's coming from, including hospital and physician charges and environmental testing, was in the range of it was $110,000. That's the medical bill for all of this, for the whole mass hysteria event. That is not accounting the estimated loss of more than 18,000 person days or the cost to the community in terms of lost faith in health and safety of their public facilities. The story has been repeated time and time again. In Belgium in 98, there was a widespread scare about contaminated Coca-Cola. What? What happened with my Coca-Cola? It happened. Where'd it go? Give me 1 second. So it's causing public anxiety about food safety. In Los Angeles, in Snohomish County, Wash, in 94, it was noxious odors, causing school closings and public outcry about environmental safety. And in Salem, Massachusetts, in 1692, which I think these are ones that you have said in your list, but pretty much it's saying is that with all these things that, like you said, it's a really bad game of telephone where it could be something that's not really all that bad, but down the line somebody says, it's gonna kill us all! That's what that one goes for me. I am going to give it back to Tony for a little bit, and then when I come back to you, we're going to talk about mass hysteria events that I know of in my time timeline.
Okay. So, there is a connection between mass hysteria and women.
Okay.
Deeply disheartening it may be, the practice of labeling women crazy is alive and well today. And its roots are deep. As in, it's been happening for thousands of years and has been pretty well tolerated by most of society. Kind of deep.
Oof, wow.
Yeah. Hysteria was the first mental disorder attributed to women and only women. A catch-all for symptoms including, but by no means limited to, nervousness, hallucinations, emotional outbursts, and various urges of the sexual variety. More on that later. To make clear how far we've come in our understanding of women's mental health and how far we have yet to go, here's a little trip down memory lane, a tour of just 7 of the weirdest things so-called experts used to believe about female hysteria.
We're going to get backlash for this.
More lists! Number 1. Hysteria was caused by wandering wounds.
Wandering wounds?
Yeah. Ah, those pesky wounds. Never staying still, always stirring up problems. According to a comprehensive history of female hysteria.
Sorry. Coronavirus!
Well, you're in a virtually very small studio room with me.
Going to die.
You're gonna die. Just kidding, folks. Coronavirus actually doesn't kill you. Unless you're elderly or already have some kind of immune deficiency.
Yes, he is correct.
Wow, I remember that drunk. That's weird.
I'm proud of you.
According to the comprehensive history of female hysteria, I'm pretty sure I already read that.
You did.
Compiled by researchers from the
University. I know I'm unfucking your fuck up.
University of Cagliari in Italy. Egyptian texts dating as far back as 1900 BC argued that hysterical disorders were caused by women's wombs moving throughout their bodies. The ancient Greeks believed it too. In the 5th century BC, Hippocrates founder of Western medicine and what may not go down as the greatest achievement, first coined the term hysteria from hystera, or uterus, and also attributed its cause to abnormal movements of the womb in the woman's body.
Dun, dun, dun.
Number two, and experts believe the condition was incredibly common. Thomas Sydenham was an influential British physician who lived from the mid to late 1600s and clearly thought that crazy ladies were wandering around everywhere. According to Mother Jones, Sydenham once declared that female hysteria, which was attributed to irregular motions of the animal spirits, was the second most common malady of the time, just behind fevers.
Ooh.
Number three, sexy thoughts were a symptom.
Really?
Yes.
That is the dumbest thing I'm going to hear today.
Outbursts, nervousness, and irritability weren't the only hallmarks of female hysteria. Certain core aspects of female sexuality, desire, and sexual frustration were also on the list. As Mother Jones reports, excessive vaginal lubrication and erotic fantasy were also both considered symptoms of the disease.
Dun, dun, dun. I'm not...
You said that that was the worst thing you're going to hear?
Oh, dear.
It's about to get worse. Number four. It could be cured by pelvic massage.
Are you fucking kidding me? Okay. I re-fucking tracked my goddamn statement.
At various points in history, the massaging of a woman's pelvis, i.e., her genitals, was embraced by many a health expert as the cure for female hysteria, resulting in hysterical paroxysm or orgasms.
Oh my fucking... This was made by a man.
Though the practice dates back to the Renaissance, and even before that, it became a moneymaker for the medical establishment during the Victorian era. By the early 19th century, physicians-assisted paroxysms was firmly entrenched in Europe and the U.S. and proved a financial godsend for many doctors.
Yeah, I said it's made by a man.
Number five.
Oh, God.
Or vibrators. When the vibrator emerged in the late 19th century, it was intended as an electromechanical medical instrument to provide more reliable and efficient physical therapy to women believed to be suffering from hysteria, and it was a welcome advance. Doctors sought every opportunity to substitute other devices for their fingers.
Did I say? I'm going to repeat my statement. This was made by a man.
Yeah.
All right.
Hang on. I still got two more.
Yay!
Number six. A good hosing.
Oh my God.
According to Maine's investigations, at various points, high-pressure showers or hoses were also used to treat hysteria. One French physician writing in the mid-1800s explained that at first this sort of high-powered douching was unpleasant, but then the reaction of the orgasm is the cold, which causes the skin to flush and the re-establishment of equilibrium all create for many persons so agreeable a sensation that it is necessary to take precautions. Whew! That was a mouthful. So are vibrators. Women weren't supposed to indulge in this hydrotherapy for more than 4 to 5 minutes or less. Like so much of the woeful, inaccurate nonsense surrounding female hysteria, or else what isn't entirely clear. Number 7. The established medical community held on to all of these beliefs for a very long time. It's easy to laugh off female hysteria as preposterous and antiquated pseudoscience. But the fact is, the American Psychiatric Association didn't drop the term until the early 1950s. And though it had taken on a very different meaning from its early roots, hysterical neurosis didn't disappear from the DSM, often referred to as the Bible of Modern Psychiatry, which is the DSM, until 1980. Sadly, we're still feeling the impact of this highly entrenched medical diagnosis today. The crazy and hysterical labels are hard ones for women to completely shake.
And that will be the end of Tony's second list. We're going to take a short break, come back, and I'm going to tell you the same thing I just said about a mass hysteria panic that was happening in my lifetime before this one. We'll be back.
The Meat Limit is a weekly topical movie, entertainment, and television podcast where your three soon-to-be new best friends guide you through the world of movies, TV, streaming, Hollywood news, their deepest, darkest desires, and so much more. Join Scarlett, Leon, and Matt as they discuss all things entertainment and what's coming, what's going, what's here to stay, and what should have never been. Plus, bonus content including, but not limited to, personal opinions, medical advice, cooking tips, harrowing tales of terror and suspense, fits of laughter, random games, and the weekly Leon's Corner, patent pending. Tune in and reach your Meat Limit.
And we are back again, guys, and I am here to break you. Sorry, we're in a very cramped studio, and Tony's foot's asleep, and he's trying to wake it up.
It hurts so bad, but yet so good. It's like my freaking leg is constipated.
You like poops?
No, my leg needs to poop.
Okay, we're gonna sidebar that. So what I'm gonna talk to you guys about in this part is Y2K. Now, granted, me and Tony were both little kids at the time this happened. This is still one of the biggest mass hysteria events the last 20 years. So 20 years ago, on December 31st, the world at large waited with anticipation when the clock struck midnight and the calendar changed from 99 to 2000. Would planes still fly? Would the banking system collapse? Would there be riots? Dogs and cats living together. Mass hysteria. Would your computer still work? Spoiler alert, they did. So a lot of money was spent. A lot of time was spent, a lot of effort went into solving the problem, says David Hatter, cybersecurity...
Hasselhoff?
Not Hasselhoff.
Save me.
Cybersecurity expert and adjunct professor at Cincinnati State. Here we are 20 years later. Thankfully, none of the dire predictions of doom actually occurred. The problem was commonly called the Y2K bug, and it sprung from the early days of computing. So Hatter says the first computers were huge and expensive. Keeping data was expensive too. Programs were written to try to control how much memory was used. He says one of the ways that they accomplished this was to store as little data as possible, in particular with dates. If it's 1962, you got a long time to worry about when you're going to hit 2000. You don't need to store the 19, you just store the 62, for example. That fucking makes no sense. The problem within that was the computers couldn't tell that it was 62 was in the 20th or the 21st century. People started raising concerns that we only have 10 to 15 years to resolve this problem, where critical systems in the financial industry, utilities, that sort of thing, if they can't figure out what the date is, they would potentially have all kinds of problem, Hatter says. So computer systems that were built closer to 2000 didn't have the problem. Hatter says it was primarily a feature on the older legacy systems. A lot of companies had to go through their systems and try to determine if they were susceptible to this. Spending to save. They had to spend a lot of money on bunkers. Crazy crap. They thought the world was going to completely shut down. A lot of money and hours were spent into rewriting computer code. Anytime you start changing legacy code, particularly if you're not the person who originally wrote it, the likelihood of having a full comprehensive understanding of what it does is pretty slim. Make a change here, and it breaks something over there, Hatter says. Had these systems not been updated, you might have seen some relatively catastrophic things, simply because if the system does not know what the date is, and it has the functionality that's dependent upon the date, make it unpredictable results. So programming has changed a lot since computers started appearing in workplaces.
I'm running out of beer.
I hate you and your life. Computer power and memory have become less expensive, so programmers don't have to worry about saving space and lop off two digits from a date. Y2K did that as a lasting influence. I'm almost done. You can take another break and get your beer, okay? God, it's like a child wanting to get candy.
I need more beer!
Give me a beer! Okay, back in 1960, thinking all about the year 2000, 40 years away, we're still fairly new. He's on drugs. Sorry. So now here we are all this time later, and a lot of these legacy systems are still around. It's forced programmers to think more long-term. What about the lifespan of this code? Will it be around another 20, 30 years? Am I taking shortcuts now that could cause some kind of problem 20 to 30 years in the future?
My wife gave me beer money.
I hate him and his life. The run-up of 2000 was an interesting time to be in programming. It says a lot of people made a lot of money, but put in a lot of work to make sure everything continued to operate as needed. He says the hype around the Y2K bug was probably overblown, but admits if you don't perhaps add a little fear into the mix, people won't take it seriously until it's too late.
I remember the Y2K.
Okay. What do you want to say about it?
That was it.
All right, well, we're going to take one short little break and we'll be right back.
It's almost story time!
Yay! Impromptu story time for the drunkie.
What?
And we're back for story time, everybody. But unfortunately, this time I have to read it. Because Tony decided while we were having our break.
My leg still needs to poop.
He decided to drink three fucking more. Like he's in a fucking pub in England!
Well, I mean, the coronavirus is shutting down the bars.
All you need is a slide case of Lyme disease.
I get it.
All right. So what I'm going to do for my portion to do story time, my God, this fucking turtle scared the shit out of me. Tortuga! Okay. I'm going to do Alice in Wonderland, and it's the real haunting real story behind it. So I'm not going to do his normal fucking story. I'm going to do what I want to do. It's my game.
So wait, this is like the real thing?
It says the haunting true story behind Alice in Wonderland. So it's not really story
Alice
time.
Alice in Wonderland's real?
Well, it's probably based on some events, and then obviously for dramatic effect, everything else was added.
What about the Mad Hatter?
It's probably a crackhead he met on the street. I don't know. I haven't read it yet.
I hope he's real. It was cool. Happy birthday to you. To me? Okay, good.
You are on some drugs, my friend.
I am on some alcohol. Ironically, like, the most legal Class A narcotic there is.
And Tony has passed out, everybody. So, I'm going to finish my story time so I can get this over with. God damn it! The fairy tale might have stood the test of time, but the true story behind Alice in Wonderland is very, well, just creepy. Lewis Carroll was a pseudonym for Charles Ludwig Dodgson. I can't fucking say his name without thinking that, you know, I'm Sean Connery. He was born in England in 1832. When he reached 18, Dodgson left home to attend Oxford University. I did that for drag effect. I'm sorry, guys. And he stayed there for the next 20 years. He was
you
a student.
Suck at accents.
I know. There's only one I can really do, and that's only because Arnold just kind of like defined an entire fucking race of people.
Yeah.
Because you can always talk like this and tell a story. And Dalu. I have a tumor.
Why are you yelling at me?
So Dodgson created the Lewis Carroll pseudonym while he was at Oxford so he could write children's book unconnected to his academic career. Carroll was known for forming close friendships with children and not really having any relationship with adults. It's Michael Jackson! I need an adult! He established friendships with the children of his colleagues and acquaintances, and he would spend lengthy periods of time with them and send them letters. Well, Macaulay Culkin, thank God you weren't born in that decade. Extra thanks to the kisses for the lock of hair. That's fucking... He wrote that to a 10-year-old girl.
You're not very good at this, are
I
you?
Hate you and your mom. I'm kidding. I like your mom. She just doesn't like me. I have kissed it several times for wanting
just
to have...
Mom.
What? I'm not... What? I'm not Jerry.
Ew.
Pretty much to get, you know, forward in this fucking story before...
Dude, stop doing your crappy little side quest, Macaulay Culkin.
I will make any joke I want to and do what I want. Na-na-na-na-boo-boo, I'm soberer than you.
But if our ratings go down, I'm pooping on your bed. Don't make the ratings go down just to see me poop on his bed. If the ratings go up, I will poop on his fucking bed. And I will videotape it.
And if he does that, I'll poop on his wife. My sister will probably never talk to me again, but who cares? So in 1862, Carroll, along with one of his colleagues, took the three girls out on a picnic and rowing trip along the Thames? Thank you. I cannot fucking say that. To keep the young girls entertained, Carroll started telling them a story, which he eventually would become Alice in Wonderland.
You just had to be corrected by a drunk. Your life sucks.
I hate you. Go back to your bottle.
Yes, sir.
Remembering that day, Carroll wrote in his diary, in a desperate attempt to strike out some new line of fairy lore, I had sent my heroine straight down a rabbit hole to begin with, without the least idea what was to happen afterwards. After spending a few years refining and editing the story, Alice's Adventures in Wonderland in 1865, before writing the sequel Through the Looking Glass and What Alice Found There, Carroll was also known as a keen photographer, and he took photos of nude and semi-nude children, including a full frontal nude shot of Alice's sister, Lorena. Carroll wrote openly about his penchant for taking photos of young girls. I confess I do not admire naked boys in pictures. He wrote, they always seem to me to need clothes, whereas one hardly sees why the lovely form of girls should be ever covered up. Things that make you go, ugh. So, in 1863, Carroll's relationship with the Liddell family abruptly ended, while he eventually resumed communications with Henry and his wife, Carol never again spent time alone with their daughters. The fuck? I wouldn't let him with my daughters if I had a daughter. What do you think, Drunky?
I already feel like I'm gonna throw up. You're not helping.
Worth it. There's no record of why the Carol was cut off from the family, but some believe it was because he proposed marriage to young Alice. Which wasn't that unusual around that time. In the mid-1800s, the age of consent was 12, and many men would marry young brides. However, when you realize this relationship was the inspiration behind one of the most popular children's book of all times, it's a bit fucking creepy. And if you guys want, let us know on the Facebook page if you want us to do, see if there's anything more of Through the Looking Glass you want us to read about. But for the end of this one, I'm Tim.
I'm Tony.
And this has been All for None.
All for None!
And we'll see you next week.
Yep.
This has been a Nerd Lab Media production. Come join us on our social pages on Facebook and on Discord. We hope to see you there. Thank you.
All right. I'm good. Impromptu time. Fuck. Shit. Fuck. That's not going to work. It's time for story time.